Welcome back to The Rodcast. It is a One Artist Wednesday on The Rodcast, and that's when Patrick, my co-host and the idealionaire in the show, comes up with all the musically themed days of the week. But he dives deep down the rabbit hole into the catalog of one specific artist, band, or group on a One Artist Wednesday. And today, we are all lucky because AC/DC is the focus of One Artist Wednesday. And Patrick said they've been talking about 5 decades of AC/DC. So how many different like reincarnations and like different phases have they gone through?
So there's two main ones. There's the Bon Scott era and the Brian Johnson era.
All right.
So like you know, with Thunderstruck is the one you always hear at games.
Yeah.
That's in the Brian Johnson era.
Yeah. I got
so that's the later years. That's in the 80s, I believe, when that came out. But yeah, the 60s and 70s is more Bon Scott era. AC/DC.
I gotcha. Yeah, yeah. You're around that long. I mean, it's like you said. It's like when you talked about the Beatles. You were just like, because sometimes you can get lost, kind of going through the catalog of the Beatles to find out what Beatles songs you like, and you realize, like, man, some of these are pretty bizarre. You got to figure out kind of what phase, right? What era of the Beatles you like. And we're actually talking about that because when you're around that long, like even we were talking about this recently with a friend of mine about Drake. Like it's like no, everybody. You know, everybody's got some Drake maybe they like because he's been around for like 15 years now. It's just which one do you like? Which kind of Drake? Which Drake are you into? Because he's now been through like 5 different phases and he's going in and out. He's going a little bit gangster and he's got some R&B and he wants to be a pop star. And he's kind of gone through these different like reincarnations of himself and, you know, just got to figure out which one you like. Maybe you like all of them, or maybe you don't. Like, if you're a true AC/DC fan, you're like, no, I like all the eras of AC/DC. I love them all. If you're a true Beatles fan, you're like, no, I appreciate when they evolved into this. And the reason that they turned into this was because of this and this. And they know all the backstories around that kind of stuff, too. So that's what One Artist Wednesday is kind of all about. So I appreciate my man Patrick there. Also, the topic for the Big Fat Poll of the Day. It's also a damn good one. Great conversation starter. Patrick, give the folks the topic for the Big Fat Poll of the Day.
Which college coach would you want to see a reality show about? Kind of on Mike Gundy coming out today and being, or yesterday and being more Mike Gundy. We know Deion Sanders is going to speak here in about 4 hours, I believe.
I
believe that's about it. Maybe actually, I think it was 11, so maybe 11 Vegas time. So it may be a little bit later than that. But Deion Sanders speaks to the media today. Part of that, we know Dan Hurley has been going the rounds, just signed that new deal with UConn. Where people are now spinning the narrative however they want to spin it because he took less money to stay at UConn than he could have gotten with the Lakers. And so they're spinning it in the fact that, oh, no, it's because he never wanted to be a part of it. Like, yeah, he didn't want to go to the NBA. It's an unknown. It's a different game.
Yeah. No, it's Dan Hurley, he's been making the rounds now. We got some Dan Hurley sound that we'll play a little bit later on. This is actually pretty funny. But yeah, he would be good on there. I throw out Kim Mulkey.
Yeah.
Because I'm not even she's just entertaining. She's always got something to say. But I think the Big 12, and this may be what part of the Big 12 sales pitch. I mean, I think they got two of those coaches.
Yeah.
I mean, Deion Sanders and Mike Gundy. I said Mike Gundy's going to say something. He always does. That is considered polarizing. He did not disappoint. But I like your idea, and maybe the Big 12 is thinking about it, that, I mean, Deion Sanders and Mike Gundy, just their personalities alone, it could be really intriguing if they end up in a makeshift kind of rivalry while they're in the Big 12.
Can we make them do a media circuit like C.J. Stroud and Micah Parsons?
Oh, yes. Like the Odd Couple kind of thing. Oh, Deion Sanders, Mike Gundy reality show Odd Couple thing. Yes. Where Deion Sanders and Mike Gundy just go do random stuff together. I would watch it. I'm not going to lie. Because they would be entertaining. They're so very different. I don't know. That could be... I don't know. Like I said, if both of those teams are pretty good when they play, you said they play at the end of the year?
End of the year, last game.
Man. Like I said, so maybe you were right yesterday. Maybe Brett Yarmark is thinking, I'm not going to pump that up until it's necessary, but I'm going to plant that seed. And if both of those guys are good at the end of the year or even close to it, I'm going to start he's going to work like a fight promoter. I'm going to start like trying to direct some shots at each other.
Yes.
About that game. That'd be great if your, you know, Big 12 title game potentially could come down to one of the winners or that had some impact on the Big 12 title game. That'd be best case scenario, I think, for the Big 12 right now.
Yeah.
That's a nice sales. That's something to sell.
If you can just get a little bit more controversy from one of these teams mm-hmm. before you get to there, so yep. the other one just drops some snide comments in, which, because yep. they both feel like guys that would drop snide comments about the other guy.
Oh, because, yeah, there's no way. They respect each other, but I don't necessarily think they would like each other.
Yeah. No, yeah. I'm like Gundy.
So give him a chance.
Yeah, that Gundy, you know, the guy just dropping the, well, you know. You know, we like to get a team that stays here and wants to play for us and not yeah. transfers in every single year and take just throw those kind of shots and then
yeah. I don't like Louis. I don't have Louis Vuitton luggage, but it's I'm with you. I think even the media could start something up between those two. It would be pretty easy in my opinion. Yes. And I think I will say this: Deion understands, and he understands the value of promotion. He does. I mean, he was literally doing it in Colorado when he was picking fights with different coaches, and so he could make videos trash talking WWE style before the game. Remember, he was like, but they made me do this, talking to the team. I was just trying to mind my own business, but they made it personal. You know what I'm saying? And then him and Jay Norvell got into it, and the Matt Rhule thing, and that was big. And I think Deion understands that, hey, man, it's petty, but petty is part of promotion. And they were one of the most watched college football teams in the country last year, guys, in all of college football. They won 4 games. They were one of the most watched teams in all of college football. Why? He was trash talking. He was promoting it. So Deion understands that power.
Yeah.
And I wonder if Deion, you can go at Mike Gundy a little bit and just bait Mike Gundy into it. I think that'd be pretty easy to bait Mike Gundy into saying something. You know what I mean? And if they do, that could be something good for the Big 12 to sell. I would be interested. Because what's the biggest Big 12 game of the season this year? What is it?
Yeah. I don't know.
It used to always be Texas and Oklahoma
then
Oklahoma or Texas, depending on and whoever's going to be a good team in the Big 12. Maybe it's Oklahoma State. Maybe it's TCU. But then that would be a big game. But what's the big game this year?
I don't know.
In the Big 12.
No. Exactly. No, because Brett Yarmark took the college basketball line for yesterday. We're the deepest conference.
Ooh. In football? Yeah.
Well, he said we're the deepest conference overall is what he was saying.
Oh, ooh. No,
I think is what he was. I think was
in all sports. Is that what you're talking about?
I mean, you'd have to go pull the actual quote of it, but that was what he was saying. Was they were the deepest conference.
I know. I heard of the quote. He said that I think it's safe to say we're more relevant now than we were before.
Safe to say.
It's the old George Costanza line. It's not a lie if you believe it. They are not more relevant now than they were before. You lost your two blue bloods. We're literally talking about now what's your biggest game. We don't even know what the biggest game is going to be Big 12
schedule. I do say, any Big 12 media people that are out in Vegas right now, I know you're still sleeping. But
yeah, what if they make the start times later? Like, hey, man, we're in Vegas. We're in Vegas. Start time a little bit later.
but let's be – please, somebody ask Deion about Gundy yesterday.
Oh, they've got to.
You have to ask him about the Ollie Gordon and no punishment. What would you do? And throw that one out there.
Yep.
Just try and set one out there for him.
And give Deion, let Deion go. Because he might even just slip in a little jab at Gundy.
Yeah.
Gundy needs to hear that. Then Gundy gets asked about it. And we can already start this train rolling.
Look, I'm trying to make the Big 12 more interesting for myself this year.
Hey. I think you're right. I mean, that should be a rivalry. That should be. I don't know how. And I said maybe the Big 12 is already thinking about it because they put the game last.
I mean, we don't have Bedlam anymore. So,
exactly. No, this is how freaky it is. Real quick, because I know we got to get to the Horn headlines, and I want to get to the DAC audio. I was talking to, talking to my man CJ Vogel about this yesterday at On Texas Football. Shout out to OnTexasFootball.com, the On Texas Football YouTube channel. Go check it out. The freaky thing about this year's schedule, usually Texas-Oklahoma is the biggest game on the schedule every year.
Yeah.
Period. And it's nothing really even close to it. Every now and then you'll get a non-con that's real big. So you got, back in the day, Texas-Ohio State, the Texas-Bama game. You get one of those non-con, and that's starting to become more and more common. All right? So you'll get that big non-con game, and then you get the Oklahoma game. But usually, in terms of big games, unless you're talking about 2008, where Texas played Texas Tech late, and it was basically for a BCS appearance. Unless you're talking about something like that, which we'll admit in the Big 12 was kind of rare. You really didn't have that often, right? Where you had late in the season another Big 12 team ranked in the top, what was Tech then, top 10, top 8, or wherever they were ranked. So if you start looking at it, usually your season would almost hit a peak and a plateau in terms of the big marquee games right after the Oklahoma game, because you wouldn't have usually a game that's much bigger than that. If you get to the Big 12 title game after the season, postseason, okay. Not, you know, college football playoff, different time. I'm talking about during the regular season here. But now in the SEC, you're going to have two games after the Oklahoma game that are arguably bigger than the Oklahoma game. That never happens. The Georgia game could end up being bigger than that, especially if they're number one in the country.
Yeah.
And depending on where you are. And that Texas A&M game, and I've said it all this offseason, Paul Feinbaum agrees, Daniel Jeremiah agrees too. It's going to be bigger than the Texas-Oklahoma game this year. Just this year. Not every year, and not prior to this, but this one year, rekindling the rivalry, it will be. And everything that's going on between Texas and A&M in the offseason. So it's just rare to have multiple games in the regular season bigger than the Texas-Oklahoma game.
Yeah.
And this year, that is the case. And it may be the case going forward, just because you're just in the SEC now. This is maybe the new
way because, you know, unless you get lucky, you're probably going to probably have a Georgia or Alabama on that schedule most of the time. And even that, even if you don't, there's an Ole Miss game. Or there's some, you know, you're going to play against one of them good teams.
Yeah. Later on. And then that, like I said, we don't know how good A&M's going to be.
And now you're also scheduling a bunch of non-conferences that are big. Because now, I mean, you know.
Right, it just feels like the Oklahoma game is kind of fading. This season, it won't always be the case, but it seems like it's kind of fading. But like this year, people feel like they're more excited about the Michigan game, the Georgia game, and the A&M game than they are about the Oklahoma game. And that is just rare.
It is.
Yeah, that's
I think
rare.
It's a good thing because you want it to be, when you care about the Oklahoma game, you want them to be good. And it just doesn't, and they may be, and the Oklahoma game will matter more and more if they start winning.
It always does.
But that's also a thing that I feel like the Oklahoma game was always – well, we should both be undefeated because we're playing Big 12 teams and we didn't play, you know. So
yeah, you're the apex predators in that.
Yeah, so it wasn't. But now you walk into it and say, well, you know, maybe we won't be both undefeated when we walk into that game.
So that's good because of the big-time non-conference games you're playing now. Good point. And just because you may get an early, you know, marquee game in the SEC to start off SEC play now, as opposed to the Big 12, it'd be Kansas or Iowa State or somebody like that. No, it's just – and I think we got to get used to this. Because we're not used to it, but that Texas-Oklahoma game, it just may not be your last big game of the season anymore. It's probably just going to be, you know, thrown in there with a lot of other marquee games now because you're always going to have your big non-con, because that's a CDC staple now. Got to have that big, sexy non-con of some kind with a blue blood, and then now you're in a league full of blue bloods. You're not the only – in the Big 12, it was only two. It was just two of y'all. It was you and Oklahoma. There was only two blue bloods. Now they have no blue bloods. Now they got a lot of these new bloods who are hoping to be blue bloods one day. All right, let's get updated. Let's get informed and educated first on all the top stories of the day. Then we'll come back and we'll play that Dak Prescott audio for you, talking about the contract negotiations for the Cowboys and the boot controversy that was much ado about nothing. But first, the Horn Headlines with Patrick Davis.
All right, your Horn Headlines brought to you by Top Gun Rentals and Lawn Equipment. In the MLB, the Astros got a 4-3 win over the Marlins yesterday, with Ronyal Blanco getting his ninth win of the season, pitching seven innings, allowing two runs with seven strikeouts. Alex Bregman hit a two-run homer in the seventh to take the lead, and the Astros pick up the victory, keeping them in the hunt for the AL West division race. Houston will send Framber Valdez to the mound tonight, looking to keep their seven-game home win streak alive against Brian Hoeing in what will be a bullpen game for the Marlins. And the Rangers won their fifth straight following a eighth-inning homer from Aldolis Garcia to put the Rangers up 5-4. Max Scherzer pitched 6 2/3 innings, only allowing 3 earned runs, but didn't pick up the win as he could not get out of the seventh inning. Josh Smith picked up 3 hits in the game, knocking in 2 RBIs as he remains the Rangers' leader in batting average this season, hitting .296. Mike Lorenzen will get the start for the Rangers tonight, building on a 5-inning performance in his last outing, only allowing 1 hit. And that is your Horn Headlines.
All right, thank you, Patrick, for the Horn Headlines. I appreciate those. All right, let's get to this audio of Dak Prescott. So he spoke to the media. We have two pieces of audio here. He spoke to the media. The first is him asking, the media member asking about contract negotiations. Are there contract negotiations going on right now? Or are we at a, pretty much of a stalemate? You know, what's the update? Here is what Dak Prescott had to say.
Again.
Yeah, I mean, there's been conversations back and forth, but for the most part, for me, as y'all know, I've been letting my agent do that, especially as we get right here into training camp. Day one of training camp, my mind flips to just obviously helping my team and just doing everything I can within the organization and on the football field to make sure that I'm my best and everyone around me is their best, and the money and all that will take care of itself as it always has.
All right, so, hey, talks, they're ongoing. That's a good thing, all right? We're not, I think at one point, remember Jerry came out and almost implied that they were stuck kind of in place, that there was a stalemate of sorts. Maybe the Trevor Lawrence deal probably changed that. Maybe there was a stalemate about, well, we think you're worth this, and you're not getting Joe Burrow money. And it's like, well, I'm an MVP now, and Trevor Lawrence got Joe Burrow money, so can't use that as a negotiating tactic anymore. It's like, so I don't even know what the tactic would be for the Cowboys. How do you, how do you negotiate him down? There's no way to really lowball him. The lowball would be 55. And it's like, well, you got to pay more than 55 because he's better than Trevor Lawrence.
I think, again, it's all about that guaranteed money at this point. You're talking more about guaranteed money. You're talking about, can we get that, you know, franchise tag thing gone, or can we get a no trade? Like, what can we work on to get ourselves a little bit of leverage in 2 to 3 years where we can get out of this contract in 2 to 3 years and it won't kill us financially, whereas Dak Prescott's people want as much guaranteed as possible, and we want 4 years and all of it pretty much guaranteed, so you can't get out of it until 4 years.
They should – well, yeah, how old is Dak? They should both kind of want the three-year deal fully guaranteed. That way the Cowboys can get him off the books quicker. It would give him a discount on the salary cap if they end up paying more cash. And Dak should want to get back on the free agent market as quick as possible. But if he's older, I can understand him thinking, this is my last
chance. He's only 30.
Oh, man. Yeah, he should want a three-year deal.
Yeah.
He'll be back on the market and be able to get another big deal. Play it like Kirk Cousins. Sign a three-year deal and just get as much guaranteed money as you can. Cowboys should want the same thing. If they don't like Dak, I mean, apparently they don't. If they loved him so much, he'd be re-signed already and extended. Yeah. And so maybe they're worried about whether Dak can achieve in the offseason. I'm sorry, in the postseason. So, I mean, the three-year deal and as much of it fully guaranteed as possible works for both sides. Gives the Cowboys a chance to pivot to another quarterback if that's where they want to go. Now you got 3 years to figure that out, whether it's Trey Lance or whether you've got to invest in another quarterback. I think the three-year deal would work. But if, the Cowboys used to want longer-term deals. That's what they wanted out of their players. They wanted the long-term deals, giving them a chance to restructure things as they go, move money around. And the players usually would want the shorter deals so they get back to the free agent market as quick as possible. But I could see the Cowboys, just because of their salary cap situation and because of how much money they have to pay to, obviously, Michael Parsons, CeeDee Lamb, I could see them wanting to be a shorter deal too, because they don't seem like they love Dak.
No,
they don't
seem like they
love him. Like,
but that's also where a guy like Jerry, and I mean, a lot of teams want to do this, so I won't say Jerry, but where you say, well, we want a 5-year deal, we want to guarantee the first three.
There you go.
And so we still have you for 2 more years. If you're playing great and you're winning MVPs and we're winning Super Bowls, you're under contract. You can't go anywhere. But
I like that.
But if we want to ditch you after three, we can, but you only get three guaranteed. And then Dak can say, no, but I want all five guaranteed if we want to do that. If you want that contract, or I want three guaranteed and out, I don't want to play. You know, that's the Stephon Diggs contract that the Texans just let him out of, was a deal that was very, basically unguaranteed for the last 3 years of the contract, and ends up screwing him because, the salary cap keeps going up. And wide receivers jumped a ton between when he signed that and when it went.
Yeah.
So he got screwed on the back end and was going to be under team control for another three years or whatever it was going to be. So
don't get me started about the Texans. they acquire all this great value and then they squander it. And I don't understand it. They did it with the Joe Mixon deal. They did it with the Stephon Diggs deal. But you said that it may be just their goodwill for the locker room. Something you've talked about with the Cowboys. They don't have that kind of goodwill. And the Texans are saying, no, well, we got goodwill with our players in the locker room. They actually trust us more than nobody really trusts management, but they trust them more than they trust the Cowboys. The Cowboys' management and their locker room may be at odds right now, at opposition, because even the head coach is a lame duck coach. Not the case really with the locker room with the Texans, because your coach is a former Texan who was in that locker room, and there's a different mentality about we'll give players a chance.
We're gonna take care of you.
Bet on yourself, and then and we cash in when you can do that. Yeah.
Yes.
No, I totally agree. Good stuff there. All right, let's get to this other Dak Prescott piece of audio, and then we will push Raj's rant to next segment so we can try to stay close to on time here. This one's about the boot controversy. Remember, he was spotted with a boot on his foot during the on his ankle during the Cabo San Lucas vacation he recently went on. Here's Dak Prescott addressing the viral story about his injured ankle.
Yeah, I'm great. Honestly, I'm getting older. It's the same ankle, right, that I snapped and had a nasty surgery on 4 years ago. So, yeah, a couple of hard days of training, and, you know, you get a little sore, and then you're going on a fishing trip, and you want to protect it and make sure that things don't get worse. So, literally, it's absolutely nothing. That's why so I said people are reaching, trying to make things that they aren't. I'm getting older, have to take care of my body, have to be smart. And if I can take precautions and lessening something by putting on a boot, I'm going to do it. And so... sorry that it caused such a whirlwind.
All right, there you go. He's right about that. That's, you know, he's Father Time is undefeated, man. So as if you can try to be, you know, cautious and try to be proactive with that kind of stuff, as you get older, you got to do it more and more. And so yeah. Dak understands that. So you want a quarterback like that, by the way.
No,
he's on vacation and thinking about, you know what, now I probably should put that boot on my ankle. It's not going to look good. It ain't fashionable. Matter of fact, I'm not even going to have a good time because I'm on the boat. I can't even move around. But you know what? It's best for my team. This is going to help my team. It's going to help us. I want a quarterback thinking like that. Yeah.
No, I mean, I think you should wear two boots.
Well, both just kind of waddling around vacation. Yeah, no, he liked that. I mean, trust me, I saw the first thing I thought of when I saw CJ Stroud playing on the beach, like playing beach football. I thought, dang, man, just I hope he's not running around or doing anything like that because I don't want CJ Stroud to get hurt. I mean, that's paranoia of fans. And you got, you know, that because he's young. And it's like, man, when you're young, you're almost indestructible. You believe you're Superman. Yeah, you got Dak Prescott on vacation. And now I've already had some injuries in my career already. I'm going to be really cautious, even on vacation. I like it. I said, I like the mindset. Like the mindset there. Okay, that's some Dak Prescott. Oh, I want to get into the Cowboys a little bit, too. We always got time to get to the Cowboys. I saw a stat about the Cowboys and their defense that I wanted to get into, but we got time and we'll address that. We talked about yesterday about all the players on one-year deals, coaches included now, that right now the last year of their contract for the Cowboys. So we got some of that. I got a conversation related to that, but it's a topic that we can get to a little bit later on this week if we don't get to it during the show. But next segment, I want to talk about the clutch gene. Matter of fact, we can talk a little bit about Dak Prescott. He's got some of that clutch gene. So there's some people that believe that if you have an elite skill set as a quarterback, all right, elite skill set as a quarterback, all the kind of the raw materials and traits that, you know, you should automatically have the clutch gene. I don't think that's the case. I think there are players who have the clutch gene, but they're not necessarily – a quarterback with an elite skill set. They just got the clutch gene. And some quarterbacks, they have an elite skill set as a quarterback, but then they don't have the clutch gene. And what you want is a quarterback that's both, and there's a reason this guy is the best quarterback in the league. So we'll talk about that. We'll also talk about where Dak Prescott stands on the clutch meter, if you will. So we'll get into that in Rod's rant of the day. All of that and more right here on the Rodcast featuring Patrick Davis. I'm Tom Longhorn. Rod Babers coming back on the horn.
I'm as mad as hell, and I'm not gonna take this anymore!
Find out what happens when people stop being polite and start getting real.
You ain't keeping it real!
My God! Okay, it's happening! Everybody stay calm!
No, oh, you've done it now. It's time for Rod's Rant of the Day.
Hold on to your butt.
Alright, welcome back to the Rodcast. Time to get into Rod's Rant of the Day. I want to talk about the clutch gene a little bit, something I've been keeping up with for a long time. Fourth quarter comebacks and game-winning drives. And a fourth quarter comeback, essentially, down 1 to 8 points with the ball in the fourth quarter or overtime. Game-winning drive tied or down 1 to 8 points. And obviously going in for a game-winning drive, right, to score points and go ahead. And you measure these in opportunities. So, you know, when you have the opportunity for a fourth quarter comeback or game-winning drive and how often you convert those opportunities in a fourth quarter comeback or game-winning drive. That essentially is the formula for the clutch gene here. And the most clutch quarterback in the NFL is easily Patrick Mahomes, in my opinion. Now, he doesn't have necessarily the best win percentage. He's actually second now, and I'll get to number one here in a second, which is kind of freaky. But Patrick Mahomes, in fourth quarter comeback opportunities, is 50% win percentage. In fourth quarter comeback opportunities, so 50% of the time, when he's down in the fourth quarter, it works every time. He's got damn near 54% win percentage if you combine fourth quarter comeback and game-winning drive opportunities. So in those situations, he is able to convert and put his team in a winning situation 54% of the time. The more impressive thing about Patrick Mahomes, though, actually is his clutch gene when he's down double digits. This is why he's the most clutch player in the NFL, regardless of position. But he, in games where he's down double digits in the playoffs, so these are games against good teams. These are playing games against good teams, the best teams. And you're talking about in the playoffs, biggest stage, everything on the line, right? This is what people want from Dak Prescott. Game on the line. They want big Dak energy. You know, you get that kind of energy from Patrick Mahomes in big games. Think about the Super Bowls he's played in. He's been down double digits in every Super Bowl he's played in. He's 3-1. Let that sink in. He's been down double digits. He was down double digits in the last one, the one I went to. Shano has had this dude down double digits twice in a Super Bowl. That is nightmare fuel, ladies and gentlemen. He's had this dude down double digits twice, in addition to the meltdown when he was the offensive coordinator for the Falcons, where they were up, you know, 25 points or whatever it was, 23 points, whatever it was, they were up. He's had him down double. Let me give you some comparisons. Down double digits. Here are the numbers, or at least the win-loss record for the GOATs, some of the greatest quarterbacks of all time, when they've been down double digits in the playoffs. Aaron Rodgers, 2-6. Drew Brees, 1-8. Joe Montana, 2-6. Brett Favre, 1-7. Peyton Manning, 2-7. Josh Allen, 0-4. Joe Burrow, 1-2. Lamar Jackson, 1-4. Tom Brady, 5-8. You're not supposed to have a winning record in situations where you're down double digits in the playoffs. And in the Super Bowl, he's down double digits, able to come back and win them. The only one he didn't was the Tampa Bay game, and we all know how that one worked out. Give props to Todd Bowles and what they did there. It's a great game plan. Game plan should be in the Pro Football Hall of Fame. And then you remember, Patrick, as I do, against Houston. Houston was up, three touchdowns against Patrick Mahomes at one point. And then,
1 point is generous.
It felt
like 15 seconds, and everything was happy.
That is the only game in history. I'm not joking. It's the only game in history where there was a comeback of, I believe it was 23 points or something like that, of 23 points or more, where the team who came back to win was already leading by half.
Yeah, it was quick.
Like, they were already leading.
It was quick.
I think they went into halftime with the lead, and the Texans had, at one point, like a 23-point lead. I forget exactly. But he engineered that, too. And that's when I started keeping up with it. Like, hold up, man, this don't happen a lot. This is not a usual thing. When you get up double digits on somebody in the playoffs, that's all she wrote. Not the case for Patrick Mahomes. That's why he's the most clutch player in the NFL. 5-2 in those situations, ladies and gentlemen. So that no lead is really safe with that dude. That is, like I said, that's different. And getting back to the clutch team, so he's the most clutch. He's the clutch god in the NFL, in my opinion. Just because the double digit thing kind of blows me away. But here's the one that's shocking. So let's go look at all the let's go look at the top six or seven guys. If you look at fourth quarter comeback winning percentage combined with game-winning drive win percentage. Right now, you know who has the best win percentage? It's Kenny freaking Pickett. He's at a 60% win percentage. Now, small sample size, 6-4 in fourth quarter comeback opportunities. But if you combine fourth quarter comeback opportunities and game-winning drive opportunities, 63% win percentage. Exactly. He's like, Kenny freaking Pickett. Sometimes it's the pieces around you. Sometimes, hey, some guys, they may have the clutch gene. Doesn't mean you're a great player. Doesn't mean you're elite. You know who had the clutch gene at Texas? Case McCoy. Y'all remember Case McCoy?
Yeah.
Clutch gene.
Yeah.
Big games, Oklahoma game, Texas A&M game. You'd be like, how the hell is Case McCoy out there slaying the rock like this? Clutch gene. He had it. Elite skill set? Nope. Clutch gene? All day. All damn day. Major was like that. I played with Major Appwhite. Major Appwhite had that.
Yeah.
Clutch gene. Was he an elite player? Man, he was built like he had a dad bod and love handles. And look, if you saw Major Appwhite at that time out of uniform, you'd not think he was a football player.
No.
A walk-on? Maybe. Maybe he could make a walk-on, but walk-ons look more athletic than
maybe
look
a kicker.
Maybe a kicker. There you go. Maybe a kicker. Maybe a kicker. Go out there and just carve your heart out with a spoon. His helmet don't even fit. Just out there slinging that rock.
Just slinging.
Elite skill set as a quarterback? No. Clutch gene? Yep, certainly. Ricky Williams. Ask Ricky Williams how clutch he is. Hey, clutch. Hey, stole the Heisman Trophy winner's woman. Clutch. Come on now.
And
carve your heart out with a spoon.
And he make you watch that pass that was going to beat you for 14 seconds in the air.
Exactly. I was so much air on that thing. And it's just like, he had the most catchable ball I've ever seen in my life. Like, every ball, like, it just seemed like it was so catchable. It was just, I'm with you. Yeah, I'm glad you noticed it too. It's exactly. But clutch gene. Guys, you can have the clutch gene and not be a great player. You can have it. I just gave you a couple of examples. I think Kenny Pickett might be another one. Jimmy Garoppolo. Jimmy Garoppolo is third, 52% win percentage in fourth quarter comeback opportunities, 52% win percentage in fourth quarter comeback and game-winning drive opportunities. Clutch. Is he one of the elite quarterbacks in the league? No. But he's something about Jimmy Garoppolo that's clutch. Jalen Hurts. Now, basically, Jalen Hurts is kind of where it stops. This is where it drops off below 50% win percentage in these situations for these quarterbacks. Jalen Hurts is the last one. He's at 44% win percentage in situations and opportunities for a fourth quarter comeback. He's at 50% win percentage if you combine fourth quarter comeback and game-winning drive opportunities together. Dak Prescott at he's at 36%, actually round up to 37%, fourth quarter comeback opportunities and game-winning drive opportunities. He's at 46%, which puts him in the top five here in the clutch category. So there you go. Dak's got some of that clutch gene. Josh Allen is... he's at 45%, the combination of fourth quarter comeback and game-winning drive opportunities. Tua's at 44%. Then Lamar Jackson's at 44%, along with Matthew Stafford. I'm trying to look for. Jared Goff is at 38%. Aaron Rodgers at 39%. Basically, if you look at the worst, how about this? The worst quarterback in these situations is Mac Jones. Who? Mac Jones. Who? Mac Jones in fourth quarter comeback opportunities, 13%, and also 13% in fourth quarter comeback and game-winning drive opportunities, 13% win percentage. It's not good.
So, not good at all. So the best and the worst were traded this offseason.
That's a good point. Yeah, there you go. Oh, Justin Fields, second worst. Also, okay. So
deal about trade as well.
Yeah, he's at 15%, basically round up kind of 16% win percentage when you combine both categories: fourth quarter comeback and game winning drive opportunities. But he's got the lowest win percentage in fourth quarter comeback opportunities of any starting quarterback in the league. He's at 11%. Yeah. So then Bryce Young's down there at the bottom too. He's at 20% win percentage in those situations. So like I said, it's not always this elite. Now Patrick Mahomes, like I said, he is that dude. I mean, he is there. He is him, as the kids would say. Like he has an elite skill set, and he is the most clutch player. That's what MJ was. Like he's that.
You should also. I mean, we should point out that too. Kenny Pickett also shows you that the defense matters in those stats.
Yes. Yes, exactly. That's why I gave you the
yeah.
The
so
top
when you say Mac
yeah.
Jones, that defense was awful, and Kenny and Justin Fields, that defense was pretty bad, and then Bryce Young, that defense is abysmal in Carolina. They were really bad. So we say all those are really bad, but the Steelers played good enough defense to put Kenny Pickett in positions to win, and that's and then if we look at what you know Kansas City now. Patrick Mahomes has had this even when that defense wasn't as good as what it is now. But in this year's Super Bowl, and that's the defense putting you in a position to win.
Man, but that's also to your point, to add to it, because you're right. Spagnuolo is the best defensive coordinator in the league. Andy Reid is the best head coach and offensive mind in the NFL. you know, that's part of that that synchronicity at the top and that continuity at the top for them. You know, and then you got the best quarterback in the league. I mean, that's why you're picking him to three-peat, guys. They got the best. You could argue they have the best GM too, if you want to.
Yeah.
You can make the argument Brett Veach is also the best GM in the league. So best GM, best head coach, best quarterback, best DC, best play caller. How the hell do
best
you
tight
beat
end?
That? Best tight end.
Possibly best
D tackle.
Best
D tackle. Best D tackle. Like, I mean, how do you beat? I don't know how you beat that. I'm not betting against him. I've bet against Patrick Mahomes a couple of times. Not literally bet against him, but picked against him, and it makes me look foolish every time. So, he's one of those guys. Now it's like, no, I'd just rather pick him. And if I'm wrong, then that'll be, you know, obviously the odds of me being wrong are very, very low in that situation. So I'll just go with the odds because Patrick Mahomes is that dude. All right, now getting back to the conversation about fourth quarter comebacks and game-winning drives and another Patrick Mahomes stat that shows you how good they are overall as a team. Man, you go look at if you're looking at scoring differential. And if you look at like the largest team scoring differential since 2019 and the teams, it's the Buffalo Bills plus 684, Baltimore Ravens plus 647, 49ers plus 583, and then it's Kansas City. And Kansas City against those three teams, 6-0 in the playoffs against those teams. Like those are basically the best teams in the last 4 years in the league. They can't beat Kansas City. You know what I mean? Like that's it, when it's time to win, nobody's better. When it's actually time, and that's just the reality of it. Yeah. All right. So we'll get back to some NFL discussion on the other side. I want to get to some stats with the facts with the stats. I got a couple of NFL ones that we'll share, but also we'll dive into a couple of nuggets from around the sports world. We get into what the facts with the stats on the other side right here on the Rodcast featuring Patrick Davis. I'm Lifetime Longhorn. Rod Babers coming back on the horn.
With all due respect, what the
facts? Statistics. Statistics.
I'm stating facts.
When I'm go ahead and check the stats, yeah. Numbers gone, it's a fact. Yeah. Go ahead and check the stats. Yeah.
That's facts.
Statistic, yep. Statistic, yep, yep. Statistic, yep. Statistic, yep.
Statistics.
All right, welcome back to the Rodcast. Time to get into what the facts, what the stats here on the show. All right, this one, man, it makes me sad, though. You guys know one of my best friends in the world is my boy Kyle Shanahan, head coach of the 49ers. This stat does not bode well for his Super Bowl chances in the future. So there have been, how about this? This comes from NFL Research. NFL Research. It says that basically Shanahan became the fifth coach in NFL history to lose his first three Super Bowl appearances as a head coach or a coordinator. So I was just talking about this with you guys. None of the previous four ever won a Super Bowl. Marv Levy, they throw out here. Bud Grant, Ted Marchibroda as an offensive coordinator with Washington and Buffalo. And they said a longtime defensive coordinator, Jerry Burns, I think are the ones who are in that category with him. You can make your argument he's one of the best coaches in the league. And I have some audio, and I can send it to my man Patrick, actually. He was on an interview, doing an interview with Sean McVay, who's a really close friend of his and, of course, someone he competes with in that division. And they were talking about how they were both in Mexico when Sean McVay recruited Matt Stafford, and that Shanahan just missed out on him. Like that he was actually thinking the same thing. He's like, he got him, and I didn't get him. Like he, because he was looking, trying to get a quarterback too. Remember, at one point, Shanahan went to Tom Brady.
Yeah.
After Brock Purdy became the quarterback, I think after Brock Purdy got hurt, after that season, he went to Tom Brady and said, hey, man, if you still want to go, you got a spot. And he told Brock Purdy. Yes. Brock Purdy said, hey, man, if you, just so you know, you're the starting quarterback unless I can get Tom Brady. If I get the GOAT, you got to be backup.
Yeah.
And Brock Purdy was like, well, yeah. Well, yeah. So he was looking for a QB, and he just missed out on Matt Stafford and might have missed out on a chance, you know, to win a Super Bowl. I mean, the margins are just that thin. I think he will get one. He'll get one. I just don't – Patrick Mahomes is making it really tough on him. And like I said, he's been up double digits in all those Super Bowls. That's the thing that is crushing. Like, you're not supposed to lose them when you're up double digits like that. Yeah. So, all right, that's one fact of the day, a sad one for my man Shanahan, and a sad one for me too. All right, so let's get to this other one. Here's another what the facts was that. It's about C.J. Stroud. I feel like I can give you a C.J. Stroud nugget every day too, because there's so many great ones from his rookie season. So C.J. Stroud passed over 1,000 yards on over-the-middle intermediate throws, traveled 10-plus yards, passed line of scrimmage, and no other quarterback in the NFL topped over 800. Only eight quarterbacks had 500 yards passing, throwing to the intermediate middle area of the field, and he had over 1,000. He actually had 1,009. And Jared Goff was second with 759 passing yards when throwing over the middle and the intermediate area of the field. By the way, that's the toughest area. It's one of the toughest areas to throw. The reason a lot of quarterbacks don't have a lot of prolific stats throwing there is because it's one of the toughest areas of the field to throw to. But if you'll notice, some of the most creative offensive minds, they have quarterbacks that target that area of the field. So you got C.J. Stroud, Jared Goff, Detroit, right? Ben Johnson doing a great job there. Brock Purdy is third, and that's the Shanahan offense. Tua is fourth, thrown to that area of the field. That's Mike McDaniel. And then you got Jordan Love is fifth, and that's Matt LaFleur. A lot of that Shanahan coaching tree, actually. Four of the five. That's definitely an area where they're, you know, trying to target. That area of the field. Yep. Sean McVay's eighth. Matt Stafford's eighth on the list. All right, there you go. So that's a factoid for what the facts, what the stats. Another one, Cowboys fans, I don't want to give you this one because it's kind of depressing. I got a lot of depressing Cowboys stats, but this one is especially depressing. So Cowboys fans, the Cowboys have gone 12-5 in for the last three seasons. And have been basically a top offense and a top defense in that time span. Here's a stat I got for you about the defense. And it may be foreshadowing something, because I've talked about how Dan Quinn's defense is so unique and has been so unique for the Cowboys, and it forced so many turnovers. So the last 3 years, the Cowboys are one of 10 teams in the last two decades to be plus 10 in a turnover margin for three consecutive years. So they're one of 10 teams in the last 20 years to be plus 10 in turnover margin in three consecutive years. That's Dan Quinn, mostly, right? Because his philosophy was all about forcing takeaways, causing turnovers. Remember I told you he gambled a lot of risk-taking, a lot of moving parts, a lot of pre-snap disguise, a lot of sub-packages, a lot of the three safeties, a lot of unique conceptual signatures, hybridism that was designed to confuse blocking schemes, confuse quarterbacks, force takeaways. And he was brilliant at it. And the Cowboys, in terms of turnover margin, they were plus 10 and for three consecutive years. Doesn't happen a lot. Only 10 teams have done that in the last two decades. Here's the, I think, the bad part of that stat, or at least foreshadowing a regression, is that the average turnover margin for the other teams in that they studied in the last 20 years, the other 10 teams to be able to have plus 10 turnover margin for three consecutive years, that fourth season, they had an average of plus 4 in turnover margin. So there was some significant regression. And there's something called turnover luck. Some turnovers just luck. And that's why Dan Quinn's system is brilliant, because he's humble enough to understand that some of this stuff is luck, but you can always increase your odds. Right? Going to Vegas, there's some games you got better odds to win than others. And there are ways to increase your odds, you know, playing those games, whatever you decide to play. Same thing in football. He increases his odds of the quarterback making a bad decision with pre-snap disguise, because I got three safeties and you don't normally see that. And they're hybrids who can move around and play different positions and immovable chess pieces. So when they're trying to identify where that safety is supposed to be and where this linebacker is supposed to be, it's really tough. You're probably going to be wrong, because I can move these guys around unlike other teams. You play a lot of bump and run coverage on the outside, throws off the timing and precision of routes, forcing quarterbacks to hold on to the ball a little bit longer. And offense is built on execution, timing and precision. So you want to throw that off as much as possible. Little pockets of chaos is what he's trying to create. Do that on the outside with bump and run coverage. Nobody ran more twists and stunts in games than Dan Quinn up front to confuse blocking schemes on the offensive line. So confusion and chaos, that usually increases the odds of success on defense, because confusion and chaos, that counters execution and precision and timing. Offense is like precision and timing. Execution, hand placement here with this foot, with this step, you have this hand placement. That's offensive linemen literally have the amount of steps that they want to time up with their hand placement. Quarterbacks are trying to time up their drop back with the depth of the receivers in the routes they're running. What? Oh, I just got to throw all that off. I don't even know if I'm going to be right, but I'm going to throw all that off. And then you're going to have to improvise on the run. And if you do, the chances are it's not going to be precise, that the timing is going to be off. If it is, batted balls, you know, off throws, quarterback misreads the RPO because he missed the count, or he miscounted in the box how many guys are going to be in there, because I had so much disguise and so many hybrids and guys moving around. Pockets of chaos. And he created a lot of takeaways. You're not going to have that. Zimmer's defense doesn't do that. So you're definitely going to have a reduction in takeaways and turnovers, and they're saying naturally, based on this stat, it's going to happen anyway, because you can only keep up that that type of prolific rate of takeaways. You can only keep that up for so long, whether it be players that are going to leave or whether it be the coordinator itself, because you're having so much success that they move on, which is what happened to the Dallas Cowboys. 6 non-offensive touchdowns, too, by the way, for the Cowboys. The Cowboys, their defense made a lot of splash plays. You may not get as many of those coming up. All right, there you go. So that's what the facts, what the stats. We come back, we'll get into Mike Gundy's statement at Big 12 Media Days. He had a couple of them that made headlines. I told you guys yesterday Mike Gundy was going to say something polarizing. He did not disappoint. We'll get into it. We'll hear from Mike Gundy. Also, Arch Manning is in the game. It's official. We'll hear the commercial from him and Eli Manning, his uncle, and then we'll also talk about what changed Arch's mind about being in the game. All that and more when we return right here on the Rodcast featuring Patrick Davis on Lifetime Longhorn Rod Babers. Coming back on the Horn.